on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
I think that when we have an experience that feels sacred, or an experience of something that we would describe as sacred, I think we are sensing that there's something more to life than what we can add up and account for in basic psychology or basic math, right? Or material science. I think we have the word sacred because it suggests that there's something precious and perhaps transcendent or indicative of a deeper dimension that is not only foundational, but is enriching, that is beautiful, that is powerful. I think all those words are kind of what the sacred tends to evoke. And I think the reason why we should pay attention to when we have that feeling is because it's pointing us towards something. It's pointing us towards something in ourself and in our world.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author Jonathan Ellerbe to discuss his book, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience, Awakening to a Deeper Knowledge of Love, Life, Balance, and God. Jonathan discusses spirituality as a relationship to life's biggest questions, finding the sacred in the present moment, the value of visualization, and the importance of being quiet and present in nature. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Jonathan Ellerbe, PhD, has been a spiritual teacher, ceremonial leader, wellness expert, and leadership consultant for more than 25 years. With a doctoral degree in comparative religion, training as a counselor and chaplain, ordination as an interfaith minister, and certification in a variety of intuitive and energy-based healing practices, Jonathan has dedicated his life to understanding the spiritual world. He is the author of several books, including Return to the Sacred. He joins me today to discuss his latest publication, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. Jonathan, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
It is my distinct honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I am very much looking forward to speaking with you. You're a kindred spirit in terms of having an advanced degree in comparative religion. So a lot of my guests don't have that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great.
I thought that the best place to begin might be, and this may seem like a very simple question, but I don't think it's a really simple question. And it's kind of two-pronged. One is, what is spirituality? What do you mean by spirituality? Mm-hmm. And then I want to know, then what counts as a spiritual experience?
Wow. Three or a few great questions built to that. So I guess I'm going to answer in the simplest way possible first.
Okay.
But then I'm going to unravel a little bit.
Perfect.
So for people who are listening, I would say you have a lot of people that are here because they already believe, right? Mm. They're already interested in this generic thing called, or this general thing called spirituality. But every now and then, I'm sure you have a good number of people that are still not quite sure. And that's why they're listening. They want to get clear. So the entry point to spirituality for me is quite simply our relationship to life's biggest questions. Okay. I think that is a simple entry point. So if there's anyone here listening who doesn't quite get it yet, or someone who wants to talk to someone who doesn't get it yet, I say, think of it as how we answer the question, who am I really? Hmm. Why am I here? What relationships really matter? And what is truly important? If you just ask those questions again and again, every week, maybe every day, or even just keep them in the back of your mind as you go through life. Who am I really? You know, what really matters? What relationships are important? And so on. What we find is that these answers are a kind of journey. And the way we answer in one moment of our life is not the way we answer in another. And if we're persistent and contemplative and we have an open heart and an open mind, we actually find that those very simple questions, which may start off with things like, well, I'm a mom, I'm a daughter, I'm a parent, I'm a teacher, I'm an accountant, they start to evolve. I'm a woman, I'm a man, I'm transgender, I'm all genders, I'm an animal, I'm a being, I'm a spiritual being. So these questions imply a kind of depth that I think comes naturally. Now, I know, seemed like a simple question, but you're going to get a thought here. So the next place I want to go with this for people listening is to consider that spirituality is not an option. So some people think spirituality is something you believe in. Well, no, I think your beliefs can be contained in your spirituality and they may help you answer those questions. But I think of the human experience as being mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. So those questions, who am I, you know, what am I really, where am I going, all these things, where did I come from? They're the answer to those questions, whether you're conscious of it or not, it's with you every day. And if you make an assumption that nothing happens at the end of the life, that shapes what you do when you get in your car and go for a coffee. And if you believe that you're going somewhere or you're going somewhere specific, that shapes unconsciously what you do. So to say you're a spiritual being is no different than saying you're physical. Now, you may not be interested in spirituality, just the way someone might not care about what they eat or go to the gym or get any good sleep. They're still physical. However, I'm going to go to one final resting place for this simple question that you're getting a big answer to. I do think that ultimately, when we talk about spirituality, and this is certainly true for, I think, for you and the kind of studies we've been involved with and the kind of people and topics we've been interested in, after we get beyond the kind of introductory threshold, we start to realize that spirituality is very much about more than psychology, more than simple matters of meaning in this world, but it connects us to something, you might say, of the spirit, something that is beyond this dimension. And that's really where spiritual experience comes into play and spiritual growth, consciousness, what is the mind, what is the nature of love, all these kinds of things.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad that you took it there, because as you were speaking, I was wondering, well, what makes some of these questions different than just basic philosophical questions of who am I? And I think bringing in that sense, and you haven't used this term yet, but I think it's fair, and you bring it in with the book, is the sacred.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that I thought maybe you were going to go to God or the spirit world, but you're right. I think that's actually a really wonderful thing to talk about, which is that really, regardless of whether we are religious or spiritual or even self-aware of our spirituality, I do think that we can have a lived experience of the sacred. I think something that feels sacred is something familiar to everybody, although they may not all use the same words. And ultimately, and this is one of the pleas that I have in the book, Spiritual Experience, ultimately, it seems that too often, too many people have moments that you might call sacred or experiences of the sacred, but they quickly dismiss them, or they don't really contemplate them or ask themselves, well, why did that happen? Or what does that mean? Or is that pointing me towards something? So it's a long way of saying, I think there is an experience of the sacred ever present and always waiting for us. I think that feeling of sacredness is available to everyone. But you know, we've cultivated cultures around the world now that really look away from that and undermine that and diminish that. But what's beautiful about your picking the word sacred as opposed to spirit or God or something like that is, I'd say, while people may debate God and spirit and consciousness, I think most people resonate when you say, is nothing sacred, or what's sacred to you?
Yeah, and I know that you have God in the title. It's in the subtitle of your book.
Yeah.
So, and the subtitle is Awakening to a Deeper Knowledge of Love, Life Balance, and God. But the way that you use God in the text, you're not referring to like the Abrahamic God or any other notion of God. And that, I think, is why I went towards more the idea of the sacred.
Yeah.
Rather than God, because whenever someone talks about God, the first question I always ask them is, well, what do you mean?
Right.
You know?
So one of the interesting things in the book, Spiritual Experience, is that I outline seven types or categories of spiritual experience that I do believe, or research suggests, people are having all over the world and have been having throughout time. And what's curious is that depending which experience you've had, you may understand God differently. Now, it reminds me of something that I know you've heard this story before, but there's this wonderful old sort of parable that is often used to explain how we talk about God. And it's the parable of the elephant in the tent. Do you know that one? You
Oh,
must.
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Every religious studies class does
Yeah.
the parable of the elephant in the tent. Well, for people not listening, and I'm not going to tell the, wandering 6-minute version with the queen in a far off land and an elephant is found in another country and no one's ever seen it before, on and on and on. But it kind of climaxes in this idea that whatever the number is, 4, 5, 6 of the wisest, most learned people of this country are asked to go into this pitch black tent where an elephant, which has been brought from another land far away that no one's ever seen or heard of, an elephant is waiting, and they're asked to come out and tell whatever the version of the story is, the queen, the crowd, the king, what did they find inside? Well, as you know, the first goes in. I like to say they're different characters, like the commander of the navy is sent in. And he feels around and he says, oh, this is easy. It's a sail. It's a sail of a ship. I've felt sails all my life. It's a sail of a ship. And then, the commander of the natural resources of the nation goes in, and he or she comes out. You know, she's like, that's ridiculous. It's a tree. I don't know why you'd think that was a sail. I know what a tree is. You know, we're harvesting timber and rocks all the time. It's a tree. And it goes on. Someone else says it's like a wall, and someone says it's like a snake. Someone says it's like a rope. And of course, the point for people listening is that different perspectives, different experiences, different religions, different philosophies are committed to describing aspects of something that ultimately transcends anything that any of us truly know. And so in that parable, I think it's used so often because it illustrates, first of all, God is just a name for something that is innately beyond the human mind, even though we may grasp some of it. And the parable also suggests that we need each other. We need to hear different stories, whether it's science, medicine, Islam, Judaism, paranormal experiences. Let's hear it all. And let's piece together this thing called reality, consciousness, God. And usually the story also illustrates how people can feel so compelled by their experience and convinced that others are wrong. Because, of course, the ear of an elephant, which is like a sail, is nothing like the leg of an elephant, which is very much like a tree trunk. So, yeah, I think God is a complicated word. And I actually intentionally, it was felt like a risk, but I intentionally said, let's put that in the title so that people who are trying to revisit their experience of God, question it, maybe come to it for the first time ever, might see this as a way to go.
Okay. A question I want to ask you, and this is, we'll go into some of the characteristics of the sacred that you write about. But before then, I want to ask about Why give attention to the sacred?
Well, at this point, I suppose we should clarify when we say sacred, I think you and I, well, I don't know, I think I am using that word interchangeably with spirit world, spiritual experiences. Although, I don't know, I want to be really honest with you and not just give you a flat answer. I think the word sacred is does have a nuance that might be a little different. So I'm gonna catch myself. I was about to give you almost like an answer out of the can, right? Like that answer is why do spiritual experiences matter? Why is spirituality important? Well, because it connects us with a broader identity, more resilience, all that stuff. But let's just go to the purity of your question. I think that when we have an experience that feels sacred or an experience of something that we would describe as sacred, I think we are sensing that there's something more to life than what we can add up and account for in basic psychology or basic math, right? Or material science. I think we have the word sacred because it suggests that there's something precious and perhaps transcendent or indicative of a deeper dimension that is not only foundational, but is enriching, that is beautiful, that is powerful. I think all those words are kind of what the sacred tends to evoke. And I think the reason why we should pay attention to when we have that feeling is because it's pointing us towards something. It's pointing us towards something in ourself and in our world. Now, super quick analogy, and again, just drawing on the book Spiritual Experience, there's this first type or category I call the experiences of truth and beauty. And every once in a while, I'd say most of us have a moment, unexpected, unplanned. We're not doing yoga, we're not in church, we're not at a sweat lodge, right? There's no praying necessarily going on here. But there's something about being in the present moment, which is usually a hallmark of this type of experience, being very, very present, in which all of a sudden something ordinary becomes something magnificent. And you might be pouring your morning coffee, and for some reason, in that moment, you stop thinking about your day. And maybe the fragrance catches you, and then you notice the steam lifting off the dark surface of the liquid, and you pause and you look out the window and you have this moment, just a moment where just everything feels good, everything feels okay. And you see beauty outside your window in a way you don't normally. You savor the gift of that coffee or tea, whatever it is, in a different way. And there's a sense that there is an enduring presence. And then you get a notification on your phone and you quickly move on and you completely forget that ever happened. But my point is to say, like, that moment feels, sacred. It feels precious. It feels poignant. Why does it matter? Well, I think it matters because it shows us that when we're not distracted, life becomes like that. Our relationships become filled with that. Music is better. Food is better. Sex is better. TV's better. Life is rich and beautiful in this immediate sensory kind of way. And I think we become so preoccupied with thought and planning and hoping and fearing and wishing. And now with digital distraction, we forget how good life really is. So those moments of the sacred remind us that there's something more to us and this world. And of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
I like what you say. One of the things that I always think of in terms of the sacred is that there's this ineffable quality to it that we just can't put it into words, but there's this richness. And a phrase that was coming to mind as you were speaking was the felt presence of immediate experience. But I wonder, A lot of people, like you were mentioning, that we have these distractions with our devices and whatnot, but we also have a lot of responsibilities and work and just life. How can someone give attention to the present moment while having to live through the 21st century in the modern Western world?
So this is the million-dollar question, right? And yet, the answer is worth much more, because almost everything, maybe that's exaggerating, but almost everything about our modern conventional life pulls us away from all of our spiritual intelligence, our spiritual aptitudes, and these spiritual experiences or experiences of the sacred. And yet, when we question what's wrong with the modern life, why is the distraction so corrosive? Why is the scaling of economies so damaging? Why is there so much division socially? When we look at any of the ills, environment, society, economics, and so on, I truly believe the answer lies in your question, which is, until we restore a sense of the sacred, until we make room for our spiritual aptitudes, being present, using intuition, honoring the senses, opening the heart, being curious, all these things, all the things that allow spiritual experiences and connections with the sacred to thrive, until we take those same qualities and apply them to modern life will continue to be corrosive, toxic even. So my answer is to not just say, can we? Yes, but we must. We actually must. And I'm going to go even further, sounding a little extreme today. But I would say that the imbalance in an individual or in a world that loses its relationship to the sacred, loses its access to spiritual experience, is a world destined for destruction.
Yeah.
Because it's a world that lacks altruism, it lacks empathy, it lacks these things you talked about, the felt sense. And the world collapses because, in a world without spirit, a world without sacred, we actually start to believe that mind and matter are enough. And we know it's not true. We know it's not true. We're finally, after the COVID sort of phenomena, I'd say it accelerated the integration of emotional health into mainstream conversation because of the rates of burnout and isolation, loneliness, online, stress and depression from fractioned workplaces. So we've seen mental health take a huge leap forward, I think, in recent years. I don't doubt that spiritual health is on the heels. And if we can do all this soon enough, then we will be healthier as individuals, as couples, as families, as communities, and certainly the world. To close this little tirade, we need only look at any global ill and ask ourselves the question, are those decision makers connected to their hearts and a sense of the sacred when they perpetuate those things? They may be connected to their religion. That's not what I'm talking about. Are they connected to their hearts? Are they connected to life? Are they connected to the sacred? The answer is resoundingly, obviously, no. So we must make time for it. And of course, if you want, at some point, we can talk about practical ways to do it.
Yeah, I would like to talk about some practical ways to do it, because I agree with you that the way I phrase it is just a variation of the old Hermetic axiom of as above, so below, but as within, so without. And when I look at the world, I see that there's something fundamentally problematic in the human experience and in the human soul going on right now. And I look at it as you were just saying, as a spiritual issue, that this is one of the main things that we actually have to address and work on. So what are some of the practical things that can be done?
So to jump into that, let me start by just expanding on something quickly that you just touched on, which is when we say we, meaning you and me for now, that we need to integrate the spiritual. I think it's really important that people listening know that we don't just mean to be more psychologically mature. I mean, that's a thing, and that's important. And I think it's even a part of spiritual growth. But when we talk about spiritual growth, and I wanted to clarify this before giving the examples of things we can do, we are suggesting typically that there is something out there. Now, I just wanted to say that for a fact. Yeah. But whether it's a cosmic design, whether it's a living energy universe, consciousness, God, there is something more than human, something more than us, that we are an expression of, and yet have choice in terms of how closely we live in alignment or in ignorance of that design, that energy. So when we talk about spiritual practices or practices that help us connect with spiritual experience, it's just important to me that people understand we're talking about opening yourself to a greater capacity of perception, not just mental, intellectual, discursive thinking, but deep feeling, and maybe even the opening of senses that you've previously considered unreal. So some things people can do that I think make a huge difference. The first thing is to explore guided imagery. Now, not everyone's into guided imagery. I know that. What is guided imagery? It's using your imagination to essentially access a meditative state and explore, you know, different topics or aspirations for the meditation. So you can have guided imagery for sleep and guided imagery for stress and so on. But the reason why guided imagery is one of the first things I recommend is that the elements of guided imagery are very closely aligned with the elements of some of the more robust and intense spiritual experiences. There's a certain meditative quality. There's a calming of the self. There's a present moment quality. And yet it's also intuitive. Mm-hmm. It's creative. It's imaginative. It's heart and mind. And so I think that practicing guided imagery can be a wonderful gateway. And then you can even use, I mean, there's thousands of guided imagery recordings out there. You can specifically use spiritually targeted ones. That might be imagining a past life or connecting with a wisdom being. The thing that I want people to consider is that if you give yourself to guided imagery wholly, you suspend disbelief and you really open to consider the possibility, what we typically find is that something shows up that we can't explain. It's not purely the result of the brain. It's not purely the result of our experience. We access something more. So guided imagery is one. Having an altar or a sacred space in your home for people that are a little more physical. So that means you create a space the size of a placemat, maybe, in a private place. And as the word altar suggests, you create a sacred representation of your idea of the universe. And that could be marking the four directions. That could be a cross on your altar if you're Christian. It could be geometric forms if you're Islamic. You could have your Quran on your altar. You could have crystals on your altar. You could have photos of your favorite cartoon characters if youthfulness connects you to a sense of spirit. Again, something you can easily look up and read about. But having a physical sacred space that represents your highest spiritual aspirations and sources of support, a kind of representation of the cosmology, right? The organization of the universe can be very powerful for people because it's in your space and in your face every day. Now, I have two more quick ones. The next one, and actually, if you do them all, you're going to be off to the races. The next one I think is something so underestimated, and it's to take time to be in contemplative prayer with your food. So by contemplative prayer, what I mean is you're not singing Johnny Appleseed, although that's fine. You're not saying the Lord's Prayer, although that's fine. I'm inviting you to be in a mindful moment where you look, see, feel, smell, sense the richness of whatever is before you. Maybe it's just a Pop-Tart, but hopefully it's real food. Recently, I saw that was on the top 10 most poisonous things to eat.
Oh no.
Know they're so good. But
Yeah.
anyway, no, I mean, imagine a salad, for example, or
Right.
imagine a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
And the contemplative element, which relates to guided imagery again, is to just take a moment with each ingredient and kind of be curious. Like, wow, where did these carrots come from? Where does this rice come from? Where does this onion come from? And it doesn't just come from Mexico, which is a whole other place, or California. Comes from the earth, comes from the sky, comes from hundreds of years of passing down seeds and farming knowledge. If you take time with the food in front of you every day to cultivate gratitude and connection, you will be shocked at what you can encounter. The final one, and then I'll give it a rest. And I'm really big on this. People, I really think I'm going to say need to start practicing being quiet and present, and specifically in nature. So I don't even care if you meditate. I don't care if you pray, but you find a safe, beautiful place and you sit there for at least 30 minutes and you do nothing. Nothing. No journals, no books, no ear pods, no phones. The minute you pick something up, you start the clock again. Why? Why? Because what thousands of years of religious and spiritual tradition tell us is that there's this old saying, I can't even remember it properly because it sounds so weird, but it's like God cannot come visit you unless you are not home. Right? Like the idea is you need a certain emptiness, a certain openness to really encounter the sacred. And if every 2 minutes you're checking your phone or quickly peeking at Instagram because you just love a little more dopamine, it's very hard for these experiences to break through. They do, but it's hard. So I'd say try it. Try it for a month, 3 times a week. Take 30 minutes and just go sit somewhere beautiful, be quiet, and notice the world outside yourself, the world inside yourself, and you will be shocked at what you encounter.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm glad that you brought in quietness in nature, specifically in nature, because I was going to ask that if you didn't mention it, because I feel like that's such an important aspect of where people tend to have experiences of the sacred. When I teach religious studies, this is the first thing we do is we talk about the sacred and everything. And I always connect it to a sense of awe. And I'll ask students, I'm like, when is the last time you had an experience of awe? And 9 out of 10 times, it's out in nature.
So I'm curious if I could ask you a
Yeah,
question.
sure.
So what's your experience of your students when you attempt to explore or help them to see that they are also having spiritual experiences? Are they resistant? Do they have answers?
We typically don't go there because this has been at community college for the most part. And I have certain learning outcomes that I have to address. And rather than comparative religion, it's more of the history of religion. I do ask them to reflect. And so I'll get journal responses about that. And what's interesting is they typically will view this through the lenses of the religions that they were raised in, although some of them do, and increasingly so, identify being in nature. But there is always this kind of disconnect with their lives, with work and being a student and the sacred. And I think that they feel like it's supposed to be separate. In some aspect. And one of the things that I try to implement is at the beginning of each class, we would do a brief meditation. And even with that, I had a lot of resistance. I had people who would intentionally come in late. And so at that one point, I'm like, okay, well, I'll just do it at the end. And then they would get up and leave.
So can we talk about that for a second? Because I
Yeah,
think it
sure.
raises something that I'm intrigued by and that I think we really need to look at, which is that yeah, I think it's not just that the modern world distracts us from spirituality
Right.
and meditation, but I'd say we have been conditioned to be afraid of it, to misunderstand it, to not value it. So, if I can just pick at this a little bit, so one of the first ways this happens is through religious tradition, ironically. You know, here we have traditions that spring up out of profound spiritual experiences, but then someone shares it. And then other people try to repeat it. So they set up a practice, a philosophy, a community. We need all those things. And then, because people, as a general rule, are vulnerable and fearful, we make it the only practice, the only philosophy, the only community. And then, even more so, if times are rough, we make everything else not just wrong, but dangerous. What the heck? Hell, you know, like we just went from someone encountering the ultimate nature of reality, abundant love and wisdom, sharing it with people, and somehow 5 steps later, they're murdering their neighbors, right, for not getting it. But, you know, I say that laughing, and it's not really funny, but the point being that we've been on a steady path, I'd say, over the last 1,000, arguably 2,000 years, away from A, integrating spirituality into everyday life, and B, acknowledging that our traditions are really just vehicles for holding and facilitating something beyond tradition. And I think that's both why spirituality and nature go so well together for so many people, because they don't need to overthink the context and the you know, politics, it's immediate. But I think it also explains why people get up and leave class, because they were told somewhere along the line that this is how we pray, this is not. This is a safe meditation, this, and I'm sorry to be so graphic or explicit, this kind of meditation might let the devil in. Well, holy smokes, if I thought that, I'd get up and leave too. I'd probably never come back. So there's been a lot of misunderstanding that's happened over the years. And in the end, the one thing that I'd say the misuse of religion, because I don't want to suggest religion is all wrong, but the misuse of religion and the misuse of modern culture and technology, it results in separation. I think that's the word. Separation from self, separation from emotion, separation from each other. Separation from intuition. And the thing that I really would like people to hear clearly is restoring that connection itself can be scary for people. Because if your emotions haven't been online for a few years and all of a sudden grief is waiting, anger is waiting, confusion's waiting, oh, I think I'll go back to Netflix. You know, oh, I think I'll go back to Instagram. It's not always sweet and easy, but I'd say there's no question it's arguably the most rewarding journey of a lifetime. I would argue that really the spiritual journey is the only thing we're doing in this world.
I find that often it what gets the hang up is religion as belief versus experience, you know? And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about the experience, so focus on your book a little
Sure.
bit here. Yeah.
Twist
So,
my arm.
pardon?
I said, twist my arm.
Well, I have a couple of questions about this, but I don't want to go through all of them. We don't have the time, but we also want to encourage people to read the book.
Sure.
But you start with the experience of truth and beauty, and you've already mentioned that to some extent. And the question that came up for me with this is, when I saw truth and beauty, the first thing I thought of was Plato, the true, the good, and the beautiful. And that was the question I wanted to ask you. It's like, well, where's the good?
Oh, interesting. So, to help me answer, what does good mean to you? Or how do you interpret Plato's use of the word good?
Well, I think that Plato has a very specific idea of the good, but I was thinking of it in terms of morality in a sense. And you do talk about morality in a sense, and you've even mentioned some things as we have been talking here about like integrity and empathy and compassion. And for me, those are virtues. And this is one of my things that I always like to talk about in a sense. And you don't necessarily, you're not really writing about awakening or having awakening experiences. And I am personally kind of suspicious of that language anyway. But one of the things that I always kind of think about is that without a moral foundation, there is no awakening.
Yes, so this is a complex topic and framing, of course, because of your background and complexity.
I'm surprised anyone listens to me.
I'm not surprised at all. But here's the way I think it all knits together, which is I am careful about the words good and moral because there's a part of me that feels they've become dangerous, right? A lot of the worlds that have been close to me, the indigenous world, also growing up Jewish, a lot of pretty awful things have been done in the name of goodness and morality. On the other hand, I believe that it originated in the spiritual experience. And here's how I see it. When we have one of these spiritual experiences, and you're right, you were kind of alluding to the William James profile of a spiritual experience, there's an immediacy, a felt presence. They often feel more real than real life. But some of the other hallmarks include a sense of profound connection, a sense of profound love, a sense of humility and gratefulness. And this is where I feel they compel us to a moral life, a good life. Because the more I, pardon the word, I'm going to use it, awaken to this deeper design or truth or experience of our world, the harder it is to use it as a toilet. Plain and simple. When I explore, and I write a lot about different religious experiences around the world, meaning with different religious cult, religions in different parts of the world. When I open my heart genuinely to learn with and from people of another culture, and they take me in as family, and they touch my heart and allow me to see the beauty of what they do. I can't see them as stranger or enemy. And ultimately, I do believe that there is a kind of very bizarre cosmic mechanism in the spiritual experience, which is that on one hand, we have the human impulse to self-preservation through fear, right? Protect the self. And we know this is neurologically rooted in the brainstem. It's been here for thousands of years. But if defending the self is the root of all our modern problems, is the answer obliterating the self, a la awakening? Well, I'd say I put a twist on it. I think real awakening and all seven types of experience, I think, pull us this way if we let them, is to realize that the self is not small. That the self, with each one of these experiences, expands. And I am my family. I am my neighbors. I am my community, my country. I am my species. I am this world. And when we integrate that as an actual everyday experience, then when I throw trash on the ground, it's not a rule that catches me and tells me to pick it up. It's a small unspoken pain because I look down and something that I love and adore has now been soiled. So I care for it. Jacques Cousteau said this. I don't know how true it is, but he said, we care for and protect what we love. And I think the spiritual experience ultimately can help us to learn to love ourselves, each other, and our world. That's where the goodness comes from.
Yeah, thank you for that. And you had mentioned earlier, and I had this down as a note, the expansion of self. And there was a quote. I'm going to read the whole quote here, if you don't mind. It's not
Yeah.
too long from the book, because I wanted to ask you about this, but I think you've answered it for me. And the quote is, "By releasing our fixation on the material world and diving into the domain of the spiritual, we naturally gain a view of life that allows for more wholeness, forgiveness, endurance, and the beautiful discovery of interconnection. Deep spiritual experience not only heals the one having the experience, but empowers us to become helpers and healers for the world around us. Ironically, the more I have come to feel and understand just how not human I am, just how spiritful and spiritual this world is, the more I feel safe and willing to love and embrace life as it is. To be fully human is an amazing and wonderful adventure."
Wow, that sounds nice.
Yeah, I wonder who wrote
Yes, I don't
that.
know.
Well, I wanted to, I had this in my notes here because I was going to ask you, and again, I think that you've already answered this in a sense, but I was like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because you mentioned, feeling and understanding how not human you are, and then you end by talking about being fully human.
Yeah. So, in honor of our time, I'm going to keep my next answers a bit shorter. But I think, in short, what I would say is for every spiritual experience that I've had that's taken me out of myself, and I'd say this is the gift for most of us to transcend the confines of the present moment we're in, allows us to return a little more relaxed. There's this funny thing that happens when you think you have nothing, right? But what's in front of you? We can all become a little panicky. I don't have enough. I don't have enough love. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough comfort. I don't have enough sex. I don't have enough whatever. But when someone reminds you, oh, hey, this is a moment. Another moment, you'll have more of whatever it is. You'll have what you need. Life isn't so painful all the time. Those transcendent moments lift us out of the narrow self-identification and help us to see, feel, and know that we live in a world of endless possibility. And with that, we kind of relax a little on the effort to control. We relax a little on being perfect. We relax a little on the fear that we don't have everything we need. We realize maybe it's enough just to really embrace what we are, where we are, and who we're with.
I think that's very well said. And it seems like these experiences, and this is to kind of take it back to the book here, when you talk about endless possibility, it makes the world magical.
I do think so. I think so. And I think there's this tricky thing that happens is, again, like spirituality, magic for some people, yes, has a luster and, whatever. But for so many people, it seems childish or it's just the stuff of Harry Potter. But I think what you're saying is true. There's a certain luster. There's a certain, for lack of a better word, sparkle, a certain optimism that brews when we connect our spiritual experiences to our everyday life. I do think life is magical, actually. And it's magical even in the scientific sense. In fact, one of my primary spiritual practices right now is simply exploring the outer edges of new science. It's all magic. And the greatest living scientific minds today are as mystical as anyone you'll ever meet. They are jaws on the floor, eyes popping open as they look at the furthest reaches of our universe, which just reveals infinite complexity and wonder, stupefying diversity, or when they look at the finest levels of reality, and they're now moving below the quantum realm as the instruments and the mathematics advance. And at these high and low dimensions, we find that the material scientists sound a lot more like mystics and sages and saints, because we're talking about this mystery, and a mystery that expresses a design that we are all inside. That's pretty magical. It's pretty magical. You know, the fact that we can even have this conversation and record it, that people can hear it and see it around the world, we take this stuff for granted. This is craziness, right? This is crazy if you really think about what a complex and rare opportunity it is. And I think spiritual experiences humble us and open us to see the preciousness of this human life. So why not savor it all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that this expansion of self, being human, but going beyond its, this is what you mean by the cosmic self, right?
Okay, so quickly for people listening, some of the other types we had: truth and beauty, those are like aha mindful moments. We have ordinary magic. That's when you're in an ordinary setting, but something unexplainable happens. Synchronicity, miraculous healing, those kinds of things. Third, I'm going to make this very fast, is experiences of the spirit world, all things paranormal, as well as experiences of divine beings, deities. So now these are beings that are not ordinary, but somehow you are interacting with them in dream or vision or some senses. And then we move on to the cosmic self. In this, we ourselves experience our consciousness typically outside our body, dream state or meditative state. You might think of near-death experiences or astral projection, those kinds of categories of experience. And in those experiences, we often feel, huh, I am a spirit being first and a human second. But you know, it's not uncommon to have that same feeling when we encounter the spirit of a loved one or even have a miraculous healing. I would say that sense that we are more than our bodies and more than our humanness is kind of built into all of them.
All right, thank you for the clarification there. And yeah, I remember that you wrote about lucid dreaming, so I should have recalled that when I asked the question. And just to be clear, I know that we are running out of time here. The other three experiences here, just so the viewers and listeners know, the experience of divine energy, the experience of formless spirit, and the experience of pure consciousness.
What the heck is he talking about?
Yeah.
So really quickly then, divine energy is typically a phenomena we associate with psychedelics, although it is not exclusive to psychedelics. It's the experience, a meditative experience in which we feel we are directly perceiving subtle energy in people, places, or things, or even ourselves as energy. It's quite colorful and usually without a lot of solid form or thought. Then the last two, which I'll just quickly lump together out of for sake of time, are really experiences in which we feel we encounter more classically the mystical, the ultimate nature of reality. We have somehow peeled back all the layers, even energy, and somehow we are encountering the spirit that all things come from. And in the formless spirit, it's typically a subject object experience. I saw the vastness of God and became aware that everything comes from God, you know, something like that, or consciousness. in the pure consciousness experience, which in religious studies is a big sort of
Right.
field of discussion and contention, it is the idea that we can, in a waking state, dissolve into a unit of awareness in which there is no subject and object. And that's what people who study non-duality, in case you ever
Right.
people come across that, that's usually what they're talking about. And the curious thing, just as a side note to all this, is when you hear them, what you may stop and realize is that every culture in the world eventually picks up shades of all these.
Right.
They don't start that way. People say, oh, Native people are all about the spirit world. Oh, the Eastern, you know, Taoists and Buddhists, they're all about formless spirit and pure consciousness. Oh, you know, but no, these are innate to life. To people, religion, no religion, culture, no culture. They are timeless, they're pervasive, but we have to show up. We have to be willing, we have to be curious, and we have to have an open heart and mind. And then extraordinary things can happen.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think we are just about out of time.
I know.
So we're going to have to leave it there. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, though. But let me ask you, what do you have coming up next? What are you working on?
Well, I will say that if people would like to know what's going on, an easy thing to do is to visit my website. It's just my name, jonathanellerby.com. Easy to Google, probably even if you spell it wrong. I have a free newsletter. I don't do a lot of selling on that newsletter. So you can get a video or something inspiring every week. And then I do updates about courses and classes. One of the big things that I do that not everyone can afford, but certainly lots of people are interested in, is that I run these trips to Africa and they're pretty spectacular. And it's a way of opening your senses and your heart. It's restoring and healing. So that's something cool to look out for. But otherwise, I would say just check out the website and see what's cooking.
Okay.
I'm also on all kinds of social media, much to my dismay. So I'm happy to interact and would welcome anyone to send a question or visit.
Okay, wonderful. Can I ask whereabouts in Africa you go?
Yeah. So over the years, I've done a variety of places in Southern Africa. So it's typically Botswana, South Africa, Kenya, Tanzania, Swaziland. But lately, I've cultivated a special partnership with a wildlife conservation reserve called Pinda, Phinda, in South Africa. And so that's where we went last, and that's where we'll go again. And there's a real immersion in conservation work, connecting with the local Zulu community and a healer that I know there, traditional Sangoma healer. And, you know, it's spectacular. Last time we went, we were involved in the capture of two black rhino, like
wow,
out of the movies. And then, you know, participating in, you know, conservation science to help preserve and protect.
Well, that sounds like wonderful work, but also wonderful experience, because I know that the black rhinos are almost extinct. So
unbelievable the rate that people are killing animals for arguably spiritual purposes, right? To be more powerful or to access potions of longevity. I think we can find other ways to be spiritually powerful personally.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Well, Jonathan, again, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And blessings and best of luck with everything you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think it's important.
And that's a wrap on episode 132 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're a part of my YouTube audience. If you like what I do here on Rebel Spirit Radio and would like to support my work, and please support my work, then consider becoming a patron. You can find the link for my Patreon in the show notes or video description. There are lots of perks for patrons, including early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, the Rebel Spirit Radio Book Club, and quite a bit more. And of course, if you'd prefer to make a one-time donation, you can still do so via PayPal. I will be incredibly grateful for any support that you can provide. Another way that you can help the podcast is to share it with friends, family members, coworkers, even anyone that you think will enjoy it. And please share it on social media too. That really is one of the best ways you can help and support the podcast. Help me grow my audience. So if you feel moved by the Rebel Spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me share the good news. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to give it a positive rating on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. And please subscribe. For those viewing on YouTube, please give this video a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Make sure you hit that notification bell so you'll be informed when I upload new content. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.